Friends.
All right.
Everything's okay. My big birthday greeting this morning was three cats defecating one after the other as I ate my breakfast and prepared my stories at home. That was how they said happy birthday to me, Riley.
Well, happy birthday to you, Mark.
Thank you very much, my friend. It's a pleasure to. I can't even say how old I am today. I'm not allowed to. My mother sent me a birthday greeting that said, please, Mark, if you can, don't tell anyone that knows me how old you are. So unless I change the myth of my origin myth, my myth of origin, to my mother found me when she was 20 years old and I was 10, wandering aimlessly through the streets and decided to take me in, I'm not allowed to say how old I am.
Is that the myth of creation?
That's the myth of my creation. The myth of my origin is that my mother, who is a, you know, a stunning 35 years old, found me when she was about 20 years old, and I was 40. She found me on my bar mitzvah. That's where I was wandering. I was wandering with a Torah towards the synagogue, and she said, "Will you be my son?" And I said, "Yes." That's how that worked. Morning Sedition is heading to New Jersey next week. We'll be broadcasting live from Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey, next Friday, October 7th. Stay tuned for details about that. Air America Radio is hosting a special panel discussion entitled "Katrina's Wake: Our Government and the Common Good," moderated by Air America's own Rachel Maddow. That's tonight at the SUNY Graduate Center at 34th and 5th Avenue. From 7 to 9, you can go to airamericaradio.com for details. I'm 42, Riley. 42 today.
Oh, you dropped it, huh?
I'm 42. I just figured she was like, all right, he didn't say it. I'm going to go running now.
Ah.
42 years old today. I can't believe it. My father didn't know how old I was the other day. I told you that. But that's all right. You know, it's not a parent's job.
Wait a minute. Your father didn't know your age. Your mom didn't want you to say your age.
That's exactly right. So where does that put little Mark? Huh? Without a voice. Invisible again. So let's look. Cindy Sheehan finally gets busted, like all good dissenters and all those who believe in civil disobedience. Everyone in the history of civil disobedience, certainly the ones that we know of, have been arrested. It is part of the gig. It is part of the gig of getting the attention and also of actually being an effective purveyor of civil disobedience. Sheehan and several dozen other protesters sat down in front of the White House, refused to follow police instructions, and were arrested. We have a sort of minute-to-minute detailed account of that from a guy named David Swanson, who, you know, it's very interesting when you look at it minute-to-minute. Apparently around 1 p.m., this was on Monday, a delegation of leaders walked to the gate of the White House to request a meeting with Bush. Cindy Sheehan and Cornel West were among the leaders, and a wall of TV cameras walking backwards slowed the walk and blocked it for a while from reaching the White House. A crowd gathered as the delegation made its fruitless request. There were thousands on hand at this point. The chant was, "Liar, liar, say it a little louder." That and "Media, step back." There was some clever stuff, though, I thought. The crowd also saying, "Give peace a chance," apparently. And then there was also, "Ain't no power like the power of the people, and the power of the people is now." Several chants. This happens at protests a lot. The clever song that I liked that I didn't realize was being sung was something that I believe Code Pink was singing, which was a rendition of "American Pie," "The Day the Music Died." They were saying, "Bye bye, Mr. President, bye. You didn't fix the levee, now the water's too high. You're starting a war based on a lie. You don't care if poor people die." kind of an interesting riff, but nonetheless, what happened was over a series of minutes. They resisted the orders of the police to disperse and were all, I guess, a couple. Apparently there were hundreds of people. There were some sitting, some standing, many singing, all refusing to leave. At about 1:22, many of the corporate media cameras were gone and the independent and small media seemed to dominate the situation. But, the onlookers were pushed further out into the street and the police brought in their horses. The chant from the street then became, "Get those animals off of those horses." Wow. And by about 1:26, the dominant chant was, "Arrest Bush." And then 1:30, they moved the horses out and brought in police vans, but they only had a few vans, apparently. There was no way they could hold everyone. And then at 1:45, they brought in a Metro bus. And there was a chant of, "The whole world is watching." And Cindy Sheehan and several dozen others were taken into custody.
Yeah, now, I don't think she stayed in for very long. I think she was probably just charged and released, was she not?
Yeah, I think that, yeah, it was an overnight stay, I believe. I don't have the report in front of me. But now, tell me what... Now, this is something that, you know, Martin Luther King arrested several times. Yes?
Oh, no, this is standard operating procedure. And what's very interesting about this, Mark, is that when you contrast the fact that the gathering of some 200,000 people over the weekend in Washington produced all of three arrests, and now you see people deciding to deliberately get arrested. You understand the power of civil disobedience. People really were nonviolent, were very, very peaceful during the rally, and now you have folks,
Happy birthday to you.
Yes.
Happy birthday to you.
I get my cake.
Happy birthday, dear Maren. Happy birthday to you.
Oh. Yeah.
Thank you, fellas. Let me blow out some candles and make a wish.
Uh-oh. There you go.
He wanted you to think that you weren't getting a cake.
I waited. Look at that. What is that, like a German chocolate cake?
Actually, it's part of...
Are we going to set the smoke alarms off?
It's part of Entenmann's new Latina Fiesta line.
The Latina Fiesta cake?
Yeah, it's tropical cake.
As Dan takes it out of the studio because we're not allowed to eat in here.
Yeah.
So I think it's called Dulce de Leche.
Dulce Leche cake. Thank you, fellas. That's very nice. Oh, now I'm going to be sitting here thinking about the cake.
That's all right. We only got a couple more minutes to break.
Well, look, that was very nice of you guys. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, Dan, Chip, and Jesse, and Mark. All of you brought that in. That's very nice of you, and I like being called Maren as opposed to Mark. Happy birthday, dear Maren.
And Mark, there's an email we got here from a friend of yours. He's in L.A., and so he couldn't make it on the phone since it's only about 3:15 right now. It says, I'm sure that, you know, you've reached the age where you're getting Botox. Look, there's nothing wrong with getting older. It's actually a good thing in any other country but ours. So basically, you're 42 today. So that's like, what, two 21-year-olds who sit around and talk about your problems? Happy birthday, Mark. Keep up the good work. Thanks for filling the airwaves with your insanity. Your friend, Lewis Black.
Yeah, very nice.
Two 21-year-olds sitting around talking about their problems. That's hilarious. Oh, that's very nice, Lewis. That's very nice. Now I'm all flustered, and we'll come back. I do want you to know this. Michael Brown was rehired as a FEMA advisor. We're going to talk about that in a little while. Bush, of all people, is telling us we need to start saving gas. What is it? What an ass, all right? And on top of that, Bill Frist is going down. He's over, as far as I can tell. There are allegations. There's an investigation into his family's company for insider trading. We're going to get into that. And it is my birthday.
Yeah.
It's 14 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It is September 27th, Thursday. Is it Thursday?
No,
I was born.
Tuesday.
It's Tuesday. I was born on Thursday. Today's my birthday. I was born on Kol Nidre, the holiest night of the Jewish year. Everyone's sitting around going, I'm sorry, God. Yay! Mark's here. I got a question for little Goliath, Dave, our half-paid intern guy. You just got to work? You're supposed to be working?
I'm really sorry, man. My cell phone completely died.
What the hell's that got to do with anything?
He's got an alarm on it.
It's an alarm. I set it. Well, I actually had a friend set it for me, 4 a.m., 5 days a week.
All right, so you had a friend set your cell phone because you live in what? There's no electricity where you live? What is that?
I'm technologically challenged.
Yeah, but have you heard of a clock that you plug into the wall?
I used to use a clock, but the cell phone was just so reliable until now.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I didn't even have to set it. I just would,
Dude, this is not going anywhere. You screwed up. You overslept for whatever reason. You turned yourself
really
on.
I'm really sorry, man.
I'm not gonna...
I ran. Like, I got more exercise than I've ever gotten.
Oh, so what am I supposed
here.
To say? Oh, that's great. Well, if that's the case, why don't you do this every day?
I'm really sorry,
no,
guys.
No, it's okay. Oddly, we barely noticed. But the one thing we did notice, though, is we missed your lovely disposition.
There you go. Yeah,
thanks, man.
And, no cake for you, though.
Oh, man.
You get no cake. I'm kidding. Happy to see you okay. I actually had a moment of worry, because yesterday, it's like, the bus didn't come, or the train didn't come in Brooklyn. So now I'm sitting here this morning going, what if he's dead? That's not going to look good for the network.
I know. I'm terribly sorry.
It's all right, man. Now I feel guilty for bringing it up. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to finish the thing about Cindy Sheehan getting busted.
Okay, would you?
Well, because it is in a tradition that goes back to the Civil Rights Movement where people decided ahead of time, look, we're going to commit an act of civil disobedience, we'll go limp, we'll sit down, we won't move. We will take getting busted to make a point, and that's exactly what the people yesterday did.
Well, the whole world is watching. And, you know, despite the fact, you know, that half of the press outlets in this country didn't cover the actual number of people that were at that protest on Sunday, which is around 200,000, 250,000, barely covered. It takes this kind of persistence to keep the level of attention on this particular issue as high as possible. Because as we know, you know, just from recent polls, public approval of Bush's overall handling the situation in Iraq is at 32% approval. So two-thirds of this country do not believe in what is going on over there, and it's very important that we keep that awareness as high as possible. Michael Brown, the leader of, you know, the head of FEMA, who had to leave in shame, whose oversight was responsible for half of what went on in Louisiana, apparently has been rehired as an advisor. The story is that as he transitions out of his job, which he will be being paid for through the end of this month, he is now an advisor hired to assess what went wrong with Katrina, with the Katrina response. Was he just going to hang around the office as a reminder saying, yeah, you better stay on top of that?
Man,
oh, yeah, don't do what I did. Oh, yeah, I screwed that up, too. I mean, what does that mean? He's an advisor.
He is now being paid by the U.S. taxpayer, by the way, to evaluate the mess that he made. That's essentially what we have going on.
What is this guy? Someone's retarded son that they have to keep employed? I don't understand what the hell he's doing there. This guy should not have a job. He should not be in public service at all. He should have been pushed out in the shame that he deserves to be. He should be shamed. Yet this administration is taking care of him like he's somebody's kid who needs a favor.
Well, it's loyalty, Mark. What Bush values more than anything else is loyalty. I'm sure he is making a transition into a nice, cushy, six-figure private industry job, but in the meantime, he needs to get paid, he needs to feed his family, and, you know, we think that the people in the Superdome were the ones doing the looting.
Unbelievable. Fears that our economy will crumble from within and energy prices will cause half of America to freeze this winter because they can't afford heating oil. The president reaches out to us. If I can quote Bush from yesterday, quote, we can all pitch in. People just need to recognize that the storms have caused disruption. He went on to say that if you can avoid going, quote, on a trip that's not essential, that would be helpful, unquote. Well, how about you? This is the same Bush that said consuming gas is basically the American way of life not long ago. The president himself is one of the biggest consumers of energy between Air Force One, heavily armed limos, the helicopter rides, and the frequency that he travels, because God knows he's not in the White House much. He's one of the most traveled presidents in history, having visited every state at least once, except for Vermont and Rhode Island. Make note of that, Vermont and Rhode Island. And having been to 46 countries, some of them several times. I mean, Dick Cheney once said, quote, conservatism may be a sign of personal virtue, but it cannot be the basis of sound energy policy, end quote. This is the president, the oil president, all of a sudden saying, don't drive.
Well, you know, you go back to 2000 when Cheney led that secret group to formulate this administration's energy policy. Conservation was not even on the radar screen. And now this man, who consumes as much gas as probably any 25 Americans, is telling us we need to conserve something, we need to drive less.
Well, the truth of the matter is, you know, we do, all right? But the fact that he's saying it, this is a guy that will do anything to profit off of oil and to get money for his friends off of oil and our consumption. consumption of it. For him to come out and say that we need to start watching ourselves means that this economy and this country is on the brink of recession. There are real problems that are going unsaid. It clearly has something to do with the stifling of production in the Gulf of Mexico, but not everything to do with it. It's a very frightening thing.
Well, remember that while Bush is telling Americans to drive less, he did not come forward with any concrete proposal that would affect energy conservation, that would force people to actually use less. That's not on the radar screen. All he's doing is asking.
He's obviously freaking out. And I think he's obviously, you know, buttressing the American public for what could be one of the worst winters ever in terms of how much it's going to cost for people to stay safe, to stay warm, to have the oil and heat energy, you know, fuels that they need at a cost that they can afford. I mean, this, I think, is a harbinger of a heinous winter ahead.
Well, it is. And particularly for, you know, people talk about gasoline all the time. Natural gas, which really heats most homes here in the Northeast, that's where you're going to feel the pinch. There are estimates that natural gas prices could go up 71% this winter. 71%.
Wow. That's going to put a lot of people who think that they're doing okay, a lot of regular middle-class Americans are going to be in a lot of trouble this winter.
Oh, yeah.
The stench of the Bush administration is spreading and getting more pungent, my friends. Aside from the ongoing investigation of Tom DeLay's crony and business partner Jack Abramoff, in which a former White House official was arrested last week, we now move on to Majority Leader Bill Frist. It's all over, Billy boy. Not that you're ever going to be president anyways. Apparently, the Securities and Exchange Commission are investigating Frist's sale of stock in HCA. If you don't know what that is, HCA is a hospital operating company that was started by Frist's father and older brother. Frist's stock in the company was being held in blind trust. What's happening? Oh, we're going? Wow. That's what that noise is? It's time to go?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's continue this fristing because I was just getting it. I was all excited to tear him a new one. All right, well, we'll do it in a second. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. How did I ever do the show at the beginning all jacked up on M&M's and Dunkin' Donuts coffee? Man, I had two pieces of that Dolce de Leche cake, the Delicioso, Latina Festival Entenmann's, and I am jacked out of my nut here, and I can't. And even keep my brain together. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have this wonderful iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Oh, yeah, I got to do that. That's all right, man. That's all right. Hey, in a minute, we're going to continue our assault on Bill Frist because he's under investigation by the SEC, yeah? Huh? How do you like that? But here, let's do this headline thing. From San Antonio Express, Bush again calls for military to take lead role in disasters. Bush again calls for military to take lead role in disasters. Translation, military to tackle Bush budget deficit. Hey, from CNN. U.S. crime rate for 2004 stays at 30-year low. U.S. crime rate for 2004 stays at 30-year low. Translation, Bush economy forces Americans to buy things that aren't even worth stealing. Let's do that one again. U.S. crime rate for 2004 stays at 30-year low. All right. Nations, here's the translation. Nations thieves still busy with White House jobs. Yes. From the Associated Press, reports Ashton Kutcher, Demi Moore wed. Ashton Kutcher, Demi Moore wed. Translation. Aging actress cruelly punked. That would be hilarious if that's what that was.
Uh-oh.
All right, let me get back into this because I was trying to get into too many details, which is a problem. Basically, Bill Frist is under investigation because his family's company, HCA, he had stock in that company. And now the stock isn't something they call a blind trust that was in the name of his wife and his kids through a couple of management companies. And I guess that means, Riley, that's, and when you have a blind trust, that's a way of hiding money of yours from yourself.
Well, yeah, essentially you put that money aside. You don't know how it's being invested or whatever, so that it doesn't appear to be a conflict of interest with any of your official duties.
Got it. So either way, from June 6th through June 10th, six insiders at the company, at HCA, at Bill Frist's family's company, which he owns several, millions of dollars worth of stocks, insiders sold off about 341,300 shares valued at about $18.6 million. Now, on June 13th, that's 3 days later, Frist decided to sell off his stocks that were managed by these two companies in these blind trusts for his wife and kids. Now, according to the Senate Ethics Guide, obviously a book rarely looked at by Republicans in this Senate,
He
could only sell the stock off if he was assuming new duties, which he wasn't. On June 22nd, the stocks in HCA hit an all-time high of $58.40 a share. On July 1st, that's about a week later, the sale of Frist stocks went through.
Now, what that means in shorthand, folks, is that he sold high.
Right. And not only high, but he sold right after everyone on the inside sold theirs.
Yeah.
And right after that, so the SEC thinks it stinks. And it does stink because right after he sold, the stocks dropped 9% in their value. Now the thing about an inside trading investigation is that could lead to a civil action on behalf of stockholders, which could make it even more smelly because it would require more documents to be revealed. And folks, here's the clincher. And I'm just going to throw this at you. From WorldNet Daily, December 21st, 2002, HCA, this is the company that Bill Frist's family started and he owns stock in, does not trumpet its reported involvement with abortion, but in April 2002, now this is a hospital facilitating company that's a for-profit hospital management company. All right, but in April 2002, Catholic Financial Services Corporation, a mutual fund company, announced that it was starting an S&P 500 index fund that would exclude companies on the abortion issue, and that HCA was one of only six companies on the index that would be excluded on these grounds. A spokesman for the mutual fund said it excludes hospital chains that perform abortions and pharmaceutical companies that deal in drugs that induce abortions. Now, obviously, you know where we stand on the abortion issue and the reproductive freedom issue. And the only reason I am bringing this to light here, that HCA does perform abortions, you know, upon request, is that Bill Frist claims to be about 99.5% against all abortions. And he has, you know, done the bidding of the religious right. He has, you know, kissed the Christo-fascist zombie brigade's arses more than once. And the hypocrisy of this guy is profound.
Well, you know, a lot of Bill Frist's conservative fellow travelers have questioned HCA's use or permittance of abortions in the past, going back to 2002, as you point out. Now the question that Bill Frist is going to have to deal with is how do you get out of, and see, this is the same kind of thing that happened to Martha Stewart. You know, you get called in front of a commission like this, and suddenly, you may start telling a little bit of tales out of school, Mark, if you know what I mean.
Yes, sir.
And next thing you know, you're doing 5 months in the big house like Martha did. I don't know that that's going to happen to Bill Frist, but he's going to have to tell a really interesting tale to explain how he managed to sell at a 52-week high 2 weeks before the bottom fell out of this stock.
Well, I think what's important about all this stuff, about delay, is that, you know, as complicated as some of the issues may be in terms of, you know, what they are guilty of and how guilty they are of it, it is that we must stay on top of this and must keep putting that out there, because the image that these guys are doing anything good, or the image that these guys are serving this country in a respectable way, I know most of the people that listen to this program or this network don't believe that, and I certainly don't believe that, but there are people that do, and it has become clear to me, just on facts, on the paper, that, you know, Tom DeLay is terribly guilty of corrupt business practices, of realigning congressional districts to serve the party. He is a very shady character. Now, Bill Frist becomes, you know, a hypocrite and possibly a criminal in his financial matters.
Well, see, this is the thing that a lot of folks, I think if they pay very close attention, will begin to understand about a lot of these Republicans. The Republicans talk about self-reliance. They talk about, you know, the individual and what they're in essence doing is getting rich as individuals. They're manipulating stocks. In DeLay's case, it's not just a matter of his being ethically challenged in terms of legislation or the gerrymandering that he did in Texas. The big problem with Tom DeLay is that this guy just took every freebie that was at his disposal. Trips to Scotland, trips to here, trips. These were people who were living off the fat of the land and yet claimed to represent working Americans. That's the shame of it.
That's right. And let's not forget that, you know, under, you know, Tom DeLay's mentor, Representative Newt Gingrich, this is how they took down the Democratic Congress.
Yeah.
That was headed by Jim Wright, with corruption in connection with a questionable book deal, which is pales in comparison to what these guys in this particular Congress are guilty of, or perhaps guilty of. They were able to stay on top of corruption allegations against the Democrats. Many of them were not even implicating them in something illegal, but because they spun it, because they kept on it, they were able to capture the minds of the public and present this the Democratic Congress in 1989 of being, you know, corrupt. And now these guys are essentially, really legally, and it seems in my eyes, acting illegally and completely corrupt, and that's hopefully we need to stay on top of this to bring them down as well.
Well, one of the things I realized, Mark, being in Washington over the last weekend, is that there really are two Washingtons, sometimes three Washingtons. In this case, three Washingtons because there were so many protesters there. But there's the one Washington that are the power brokers, the insiders, the lobbyists, the politicians, the media people. And they live life that is, they live a life, in my judgment, is totally disconnected from the rest of the world. Then there's the Washington that's represented by New York Avenue, where we did our broadcast from the other day, which is a distinctively different Washington. And those worlds very rarely collide, but you've got guys like Abramoff and DeLay and Fritz. They live in that Washington world. They thrive off that Washington world, and they thrive on Americans' ignorance about what truly goes on there.
Absolutely. Here's an interesting revelation or a realization or actual thing that is happening. U.S. forces announced the release of 507 prisoners from Abu Ghraib prison to mark the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. They are promising to release another 500 this week. Some 10,000 Iraqis are currently being held on insurgency-related charges. According to a statement from U.S. military spokesman, the prisoners released this week were not guilty of serious offenses and have, quote, confessed to their crimes, renounced violence, and pledged to be good citizens of Iraq, end quote. My question is, why were they still being held, and why did they release them on Ramadan for some press event? That, you know, this is like, hey, you know, we're doing you guys a favor. Yeah,
well, they're trying to convince many of the Islamic fundamentalists inside Iraq that the Americans have some sensitivity to Islam, that we're not really about destroying their religion as they know it. Of course, the Muslim community sees through this sort of thing. They're not sitting up there thinking, oh, great, you know, now we've got a new basis for detente here. They're not stupid.
Yeah, well, this seems to be part of this public relations thrust that that the U.S. is engaged in terms of the Muslim world and representing America in that world and trying to change their minds about the nature of what America is. The releases came about amid fresh claims of prisoner abuse by U.S. forces. The New York-based Human Rights Watch saying soldiers had routinely beaten and mistreated Iraqi prisoners at a base near Fallujah, and of course the trial and conviction of Lindy England.
Took them about 2 hours to convict Lindy England on 6 of 7 counts. She's facing 10 years in the can.
So now when we continue this conversation in just a few minutes, we're going to start talking about the reality of what's really going on in Iraq. It's something we talk about on the show fairly frequently with people who have been there, with filmmakers. Our very own Jesse Summers is going to come in here, and he's going to talk to us about some friends of his in upstate New York who returned from Iraq, and he spent an evening with them kind of hanging out at a bar and sort of making note of what they were saying. And also we are going to talk to a guy named Chris Wilson who actually operates a porn site. This is an interesting story. This guy operates an amateur porn site that was frequented by soldiers over there in the Middle East,
really?
In Afghanistan and Iraq. And many of them couldn't afford to have the services of this porn site, which was popular among the troops there. So he worked out a deal with them where they would send him photographs of the war zones that they were operating in, you know, with, if they wanted to add text, they could. And he would then give them a membership in exchange for the photographs. Now, the photographs are heinous, they're grotesque, they're graphic, they're bloody, and they're gut-turning, they're gut-wrenching, and they're just horrendous. But I got to tell you something, Riley. Despite the context, this is some of the only real war photography that I've seen, and it is from the point of view of the soldiers, many of whom were involved in killing these people, but it does show the graphic horrors of war. Despite the context, it is some of the only pictures. When I look at those pictures, I don't go, yeah, we showed them. But I'm like, oh, my God, this is what war looks like. And it's and what is the validity of that? Do we criticize him, this pornographer, for putting these pictures on his site? Or do we accept that that might be the only outlet where one can see this type of reality in this country? We'll talk to him about that. It's 46 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, professional wrestler and best-selling author, and you're listening to the two guys who give the right wing the smackdown. It's Mark Maron and Mark Riley with Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Fifty-one past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It is September 27th, and on my calendar, that says it's my birthday.
Oh yeah,
I'm all jacked up on coke. I'm having an Entenmann's crash. Now I need some. I need a Starbucks to follow. You know, I'm not. I don't drink Starbucks. I don't drink coffee during the day. I drink the tea, and I'm not going to plug Starbucks. I'm not going to do it.
But just now, plugged Coke.
I did.
Yeah,
Coca-Cola.
You said you're all coked up. I assume it was Coca-Cola.
I thought I said caked up. Didn't I say caked up?
I did say caked up.
I'm all
caked
up.
Oh, you did
up.
Say caked up? Oh, okay.
Kayla must have been a Freudian slip.
Something. Kayla's been in there on the phone like he's working the phones like the president. Who the hell are you talking to every 5 minutes? It's 10 to 7 here.
I have very busy duties.
All right, man. Is it worth getting into right now? Or
No, it's not worth it. You know what I would enjoy right now?
What?
The Cliff Notes.
Oh, I have them. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. A new report shows that foreign countries no longer see the U.S. as a beacon of hope, but rather a dangerous force. Karen Hughes is in charge of reshaping America's image abroad. In a rarity for the Bush administration, Hughes is fully qualified to understand what it means to be deeply hated. Karen Hughes is listening to foreign leaders' concerns about America and explaining our position, a long-forgotten process the Clinton administration used to call foreign policy. Hello, foreign policy. 80 years after the Scopes trial, the debate over teaching evolution in schools makes its way into a Pennsylvania courtroom. Analysts say if Darwin's theory doesn't adequately explain extraordinary levels of intelligence, it also falls short of explaining this kind of colossal stupidity. The doctrine of intelligent design faces challenges not only from scientists, but from proponents of unintelligent design, which holds that the universe was created by a well-meaning dimwit. That's a smart joke, isn't it? Smart? Complaints about the New York Police Department are on the rise. The four categories of allegations are abuse of authority, misuse of force, discourtesy, and offensive language, i.e., the four main reasons people decide to become cops. Police officers have disputed the allegations and have vowed to beat the living hell out of every single a-hole that mentions them. All right, those are the Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. In our studio with us right now, sitting here in a chair behind a microphone, Jesse Sommer, who not only is the associate editor of the Daily Briefing, which is a big news brief that is put out by Air America in-house and across the country to our affiliates every day. He also works on the Rachel Maddow news program, the Rachel Maddow Show.
Yeah, it's a great time.
How are you, buddy?
I'm all right. Thank you guys for
having me. Good morning.
As they say.
So now you're how old?
I'm 23.
23, you bastard. How's that feel?
It feels great.
Just to be 23.
You know.
But the interesting thing is you're from upstate New York, and a lot of the guys that you grew up with are now fighting in Iraq. Is that true?
Well, I mean, not a lot, but right. I hung out with three this past weekend, and it's a small town in upstate, and the military is kind of one of those respected institutions that people go if they're not exactly sure what they're going to do after high school.
Sure. they want to further themselves.
One of those ways to kind of defend the country, and certainly when you know, my three friends joined or enlisted, it was before September 11th. It was right after we'd graduated high school. So, you know, none of this...
So it had no bearing on their decision.
Well, I mean, they certainly weren't prepared for two offensive wars. That's not why they had gone in there. It's, you know, all three of them had kind of prepared for college afterwards. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of their avenue, their conduit to that. And, you know, I think at this point, there's definitely some bitterness that they'll be leaving way behind kind of the rest of our crew.
So you're getting drunk with these guys. You guys are hanging out, and they're I imagine, sort of loosening up and telling stories. How does some of that bitterness reveal itself?
Well,
curiosity.
In the beginning, I mean, and this is perhaps what you can attribute to the wonders of alcohol. Everyone is very kind of, they know that it's not something you bring up. It's their experiences that a lot of people won't be able to access simply because it has, you know, over here become so politicized and so divorced from what's actually happening. But as you know, it was the first time I'd seen them for 3 years, and as the night kind of wore on, I was kind of very slowly and respectfully trying to figure out what was going on. And the first thing that everyone kind of, or at least what shocked me, is that they don't look at this as so much of, or at least the way I conceptualize military service. This is for them just another job. And it was, I guess, a little weird to kind of feel this resentment. You know, they've all been there between 9 and 13 months. That's the most recent stint. I hadn't seen them in like 3 years, and two of them had their tours of duty extended.
Wow.
Involuntarily,
I think it would, or what I should say is that they weren't prepared to be going back, and two of the three are. And again, you know, they all had plans to go to college. This was kind of what they had, you know, joined the military for.
So how's this affected them? I mean, do you notice a change, or do you feel that there's a lapse in conscience? Do any of them talk about killing or any of that?
I would prefer maybe not to be so specific, but I can say that, yeah, there's certainly a change. And, I think it's, you know, for them, this isn't a political issue, whatever, you know, at all. This is a matter of life and death. And so some of the things that, you know, they told me that they had either witnessed or I guess been marginally a part of, you know, those type of things. I mean, they were a little scary yesterday. I guess Lindy England being convicted for things. These aren't isolated events. Listening to these kids talk about what it is they're seeing and what it is they're participating in. You know, there's a lot of brutality that sounds to me like it's a part of just the service.
Yeah, and we're going to explore that a little while. Thanks, Jesse, with a guy named Chris Wilson, who actually is a pornographer who has pictures, graphic pictures sent to him by soldiers of this brutality in exchange for membership to his porn site. But it does offer you access to the world that they are looking at and what they are doing over there, which I think is important. It's just coming through a very... you know, interesting context. It's 57 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. That's right, it's 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Good morning, folks. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Barron.
Morning Sedition is heading to New Jersey. We'll be broadcasting live from Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey, next Friday night. That's October 7th. Stay tuned for details. Also, Air America is hosting a special panel discussion entitled Katrina's Wake, Our Government and the Common Good. It's going to be moderated by Air America's own Rachel Maddow tonight at the SUNY Graduate Center at 34th and 5th Avenue here in New York City from 7 to 9 p.m. You can go to airamericaradio.com for details. Let's remember, folks, I'm looking here at the Iraq update over the last day or so. You've got, armed men bursting into a primary school in a town south of Baghdad, and they rounded up five teachers, marched them into an empty classroom, and executed them in front of kids. All those killed were Shiites. This is mind-blowing. A U.S. military policeman was killed 50 miles southeast of Baghdad. Two American soldiers were killed when their vehicle hit a roadside bomb in western Baghdad. A suicide bomber detonated his car at the gates of the Iraqi Police Academy, killing at least 7 people and wounding 30. It was a second attack in as many days on Iraqi police officers. American forces opened fire on a minibus, killing 1 passenger and wounding 4. This is in 2 days, my friend. This stuff is going on every day over there. In public approval of Bush's overall handling of the situation in Iraq, which is chaotic, seemingly out of control. There's a civil war, you know, ongoing. It's not clear why we're there anymore. It is clear that we helped facilitate much of what is going on there. But 32% of this country approves of what's going on there. That's about a third, less than a third. That means that 67% or so disapprove. So we cannot listen to Karl Rove, who says there is no anti-war movement in this country, because that is ridiculous. 400 people were arrested yesterday in a couple of different protests. Cindy Sheehan was the first to be arrested in a massive sit-down strike in front of the White House.
Well, the American people are starting to realize what I'm sure the Iraqis have realized for a good while now, and that is we're in a situation where this occupation has no conclusion, has no possibility of a positive conclusion. It seems like the only thing that's going to resolve this whole thing is going to be civil war, out and out civil war, which some Americans inside Iraq say is already happening.
And this president refuses to acknowledge any of this, and they refuse to acknowledge that there is an anti-war movement, given the fact that, you know, Democrats have been somewhat wusses about, you know, their approach to this. They just have. You know, there was only 2 people that we actually, you know, only 2 Democratic people, 2 Democrat, lawmakers, that is, who were actually marching in the march.
John Conyers and Cynthia McKinney. John Conyers from Michigan, Cynthia McKinney from Georgia.
And that's it. Where were the rest of them? Where are the big talkers? Where was Howard Dean? Where was some support? These Democrats are so frightened to still. Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, John Kerry, the people that have presidential aspirations, who voted for the war, still too frightened to criticize this war, which clearly to me, on paper, you look at the facts, they should not be afraid anymore. This war was not only based on a lie, but as it goes on, it becomes revealed that it is just a way to pilfer this country, to fill the pockets of Bush cronies. It is not working for our security, but working against it by generating more terrorism in the world. Why can't they just start to tell the truth? This war is making this world and this country less secure, and that is the type of security they should be talking about. The type of security the Democrats should be talking about is like, if we don't get out of Iraq, it's going to be dangerous for the future of our country.
It already is a clear and present danger to the future of our country, because we've been hit by 2 natural disasters for which the country was totally unprepared. Why? Because we had spent money and resources that should have gone to save people here over there.
And what does George Bush do? Apparently he has made Michael Brown a FEMA advisor. This comes as Michael Brown is in transition. He's transitioning out of his job, which he was shamed out of, for causing this horrendous problem in Louisiana in the response to Katrina. And he's still being paid through the end of the month for this job. And he's been hired to assess what went wrong with the Katrina response. What does that mean? He's just going to sit around the office saying, yeah, I screwed up.
Well,
yeah, I did that. I made a mistake.
Instead of an annual salary, he's probably getting a per diem about now. But he's still going to get the same money, because this is all about this administration taking care of its own. He bit the bullet for Bush, so Bush is going to stuff his wallet till he finds another gig.
Well, I'm going to make this next call all about me. We have a call from Joanna here in Manhattan. How are you, Joanna?
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, what's going on?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, and keep hating the president. Happy birthday to you.
Woo! Thank you so much.
Nice work.
And birthday boy, stop talking about the porn, because we sexy ladies love the real thing. Not the porn thing, for sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, gay man.
Thank you, thank you, thank you very much. That was beautiful, Joanna. I really appreciate it.
That got weird.
It did get weird. I'm a little jostled, but I find that it was very nice, and it was a fine impression of the original.
Marilyn Monroe.
Absolutely. It's not always easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now, it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, it's about the anti-war rally Saturday.
That was a magnificent expression of dissent against an unjust war.
Yeah, I know. It was a beautiful cause, and I support what they were doing 100%, but...
But what?
I skipped it. I was in D.C., and I just didn't go.
Why is that?
Well, there were like 250,000 people there already, you know. 250,000, that's a good, solid, angry, impressive anti-war number. I mean, who's going to notice if Mark Maron's not there? Plus, I have to save my voice, you know, for the show, and all I could have done is not an agreement, you know.
Well, Cindy Sheehan was there.
I know. I talked to her on Friday, that day, the day before, you know. She loves us. But there are never enough toilets at those rally things, and I'd probably run into somebody I knew in the third grade or something. It would be awkward, and You think Cindy Sheehan noticed I wasn't there?
Maybe. You're her friend. She would have wanted you to go.
Oh, man. But I'd already spoken to her early at the Green Festival. You know, I'd spoken at the Green Festival that day, and I figured I'd already punched my liberal good deed ticket for the weekend. I just...
Let it out, my son.
Oh, I wanted to get a jump on the traffic back to New York. I hate the war, but I hate the gridlock and the crowds, and I
think I have a good idea for your penance.
Hit me, Brother Riley.
You have to go to the next anti-war rally. You have to charter a bus and recruit 60 people like yourself who think it's too inconvenient to go to an anti-war rally. And you have to speak.
Okay, all right, I can do that. But wait, do I have to follow Dennis Kucinich?
Could be. Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. We'll be back in a moment with your confession, so stay with us. It's 14 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Join the Morning Sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Nineteen past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I am Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley.
Happy birthday, Mark Maron.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice of you to say again. I appreciate it. I appreciate the cake. I got a little cake headache, though. I got a little dulce de leche Entenmann's headache here. But I think my brain is going to be preserved for prosperity. You know, I think if you eat enough Entenmann's, I don't know how they do it. How do they keep it moist for
a
decade?
It's addicting.
It looks like someone else out there has something to say to me. Vincent, how are you? Good morning, Vincent.
Hey, Vincent.
Yeah, hi, Mark. Happy birthday.
Well, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate that. Are you enjoying the show today?
Yes, I am. I always enjoy you guys. Like I told you at Cobb's when we first met, you guys are intense, and you've got teeth, and you bite these people.
Oh, this is Vincent from San Francisco?
That's who it is.
Oh, you're not. Are you in Manhattan?
No. Hey, it's the middle of the night, but I heard it's your birthday, and I just thought I'd give a call.
Oh, he's a big supporter. He's a big fan of ours. He's the one that sent us that album.
Oh, okay.
Intensity.
Oh, all right. Hey, Vincent, what's up, man?
Yeah.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm trying to hang in there, you know, trying to keep my spirits up,
okay.
You know, protesting and, you know, just trying to maintain the voice of peace, the anti-war voice.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for calling, Vincent. I'll see you out there. I'll be out there later next month.
I know, okay.
Okay, right, great. Take it easy.
Hey, Mark, wait a minute. There's another call on the line.
Okay. Who is this? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, I know that voice. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mark.
Hey.
How are you?
Yeah, good, good. How are you?
Good. I didn't call to confess any sin. Well, I am sinless.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad you're
sinless. I call to sing.
Oh. Uh-oh. All right. Okay.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Marky. Happy birthday to you.
Thanks, Marky.
It's weird. I thought like she wouldn't embarrass me, would she? But you actually, I be honest with you, Mom. That was as that is the most on key I've ever heard you sing.
I know. See, I'm getting better as I get older.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know, I told everybody the truth about how I was found when you were 20 years old and I was 15, and you took me in.
Thank you. So much.
Yeah.
She sounds like she meant that.
And that makes you how old again?
Well, it makes me about 42, but it makes you about 40.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. So yeah, I'll take it.
I'll do the math on that. We have problems with math problems here. So what are you doing? Are you off to Pilates? Did you go running already?
Not yet. I had to wait to call.
Did you go running during the hurricane?
No.
Oh, well, good. That's good. That's a change for you. Well, I love you, Mom. Thank you for calling.
I love you, too.
Okay, bye-bye. So let's take a couple of these confessions. Would somebody do the math on that? If my mom found me when I was 15 and she was 20 and she took me in and I'm 42 today, somebody do that. And
she's 57.
Oh, that's not good enough. She took me in when I was 20. She adopted
maybe
me.
You were 20 and she was 15.
Yeah, that's it. She was 15, I was 20. And she took. It was awkward because her mother, my grandma, didn't know what I wanted with her daughter. And I wanted a mommy. And they okayed it. All right, that'll work. Dennis. Dennis, what is your sin, Dennis?
Hey, Dennis.
How you doing, guys?
All right.
Happy birthday, Mark.
Thank you very much, Dennis. And is it? Am I to understand that you've sinned, sir?
Yes, I have.
Okay, what is that
during,
sin?
During Dick Cheney's operation,
mm-hmm.
I prayed for them to leave a rusty implement inside of him. And I'm serious.
I like the details. Not just an instrument. Something like they'd be operating with some rusty old, it's like, give me the scalpel. It's like that William Burroughs boots. Give me new scalpel, nurse. This one's got no edge to it. So you were just hoping they'd leave that in there and he'd rot a gangrene or something.
Yeah, I didn't want it to be quick. I wanted it to be slow.
Yeah. Well, you know, oddly, the guy's had 4 heart attacks. He's had 2 angioplasties. They've right. operated on his knees. He is dying very slowly. But you would have wanted it to be a little more gruesome. And sadly, Dennis, they actually did leave machinery in him. He's almost all mechanical now. But I have to be honest with you, Dennis. Here at our show, we've had this experience before where we have liberals calling up saying that they feel guilty for wishing ill upon Republicans, certainly the Antichrist such as Cheney, and we don't really consider that a sin. We just feel, that's healthy thoughts. That on a Christian level, it may be bad to wish other people's harms, but in the progressive level, on the liberal anger level, we think it's fine that you experience your anger in that way.
Oh, I feel much better.
Yes.
There you go.
So if you want to feel, if you want to feel even better, why don't you make a donation to the American Heart Association or something like that?
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, here we go. Christine calling, what is your sin?
Hey, Christine.
Oh. Yeah, hi.
Hey, well, this is kind of an anti-confession because about a month ago, it was that time of the month, I was real sick and nauseous. I'm going on an errand about around midnight.
Yeah.
Okay, I lock up my apartment, go down the stairs, go around the corner, and all of a sudden I get that impending doom that I'm going to be sick.
Oh.
All right.
Yeah.
But the thing is, and I'm like, well, there's an alley right next to my house, between the two houses. But more importantly, for the last 5 years, I've lived next to the fundraising headquarters for the Republican Party of the state of Wisconsin.
Uh-huh. Uh-oh.
And they have these big glass doors.
Yeah.
And I barked on their building.
That's intentional vomiting on the Republican National Committee fundraising headquarters in Wisconsin. You know, that gets a... I think that is a beautiful way to take something that you know is going to happen and use it for the political good.
It was going to happen somewhere.
Yeah, and I like that you aimed it and you actually
it was aimed quite well. And
that
it
you
was all over.
Well, I'm glad you got this off your chest just on in terms of minor vandalism guilt, but it doesn't, it is certainly not a sin, and I want to thank you for doing that, Christine.
All right.
Thank you very much. That's she's listening to the Mike in Madison, one of the great affiliate stations we have here.
Oh yeah.
Who actually does their job in publicizing our network? John. Oh yeah, John in New Jersey. We got what's your sin, John? We got about a minute here.
Hey John.
Well, good morning, guys. Yeah. Happy birthday to you, Mark.
Thank you very much.
I'm a Democrat, mm-hmm. and my fiance is involved in town politics in the Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my sin is I drive a Cadillac.
Wow. Well, what? I've got a penance for you. Go out, get yourself a stencil that says John's Limo Service, and start...
making some money from that Cadillac.
Start.
It is a six-cylinder, though. It is a six-cylinder. It's not the big gas-guzzling eight. It is a six.
Well, I say that John's free limo service starts next week, and you take people to work.
Yeah.
Save a little gas there, John. How does that make you feel? Is that all right? Does that give you any?
That makes me feel better. Thank you.
All right, John.
Take
thanks.
It easy. So, you know, when we continue our conversation here, as we were talking to our buddy Jesse this morning, talking about the realities of war, the brutalities of war, that there's a very interesting angle on this. Is we have this guy Chris Wilson who runs a porn website, and in exchange for membership to this website, he solicits soldiers in Iraq to send him pictures of the war zone. And they're gruesome, they're horrendous, but in many respects are very important because, you know, it's rare to see that type of graphic depiction of war. We're going to talk about this with him and about the context of a porn site and what that means. So stay with us. It's 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
It's 34 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. You know, Riley, I have always been fascinated with how the military is trained. One of my favorite movies is Full Metal Jacket in terms of how the military creates a killing machine out of a young man. What they have to do, how they have to brainwash them, the type of repetitions, the type of things they have to continue to tell them in order for them to compromise their conscience enough to disregard the enemy and see them as objects of hate in order to move through the war and to be effective killing machines and also to protect their own senses of self in mm-hmm. the process. Now, obviously, after a war, some of this stuff breaks down and there's a tremendous amount of guilt and horror involved in that. Now, war photography, even in my childhood, I remember I had a huge book called Time Life, The 100 Years of Time Life.
Yeah.
And from World War II, from Vietnam, there have been horrendous images that were taken by professional photographers to document the horrors, the atrocities of war. You don't see much now in terms of the mainstream media at all because the Bush administration has put it has stifled reporters, have stifled photographers, have stifled the reality of this war getting out. The mainstream media has also, they constantly, their critics of the media has always said, well, why don't they show the good things that are happening in Iraq? And I think that if they were to show the truth, more of the truth about what's happening there, the 32% of the people that still approve of Bush's handling of the Iraq situation would go away. Our next guest runs an amateur porn website, but not just any porn site. The site is that's effedup.com. Now, I want to say, we can't say the full title, obviously, but it is that word. I'm not recommending that you go to this site unless you want to go to this site. There is pornographic images there, and there are graphic images of, death. And the war in Iraq. So this is one of the few places in America right now where the horrible realities of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan is actually on display. He gives U.S. soldiers stationed in Iraq and Afghanistan free access to the porn site in exchange for pictures depicting life in a war zone. Please welcome the man behind Now That's FedUp.com, Chris Wilson. Good morning, Chris.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good morning, good. Chris.
So now, first of all, how long has this site been up?
It's been up about a year and 3 or 4 months.
And how did you come up with the idea of giving soldiers free porn in exchange for the graphic pictures that they're sending you from the war zone?
Well, they're having trouble buying it. It's not very expensive. It's $10 every 3 months for full access to the whole entire site. Most of it's free, but they wanted to get into the little small pay areas we have, but since their addresses were coming from Iraq, Afghanistan, the credit card company considers those high-risk places and wouldn't process their cards, no matter how much money they had in their account, they were getting denied, right, because just of where they were living at the time.
Now, obviously, you're a pornographer by trade for the most part, a purveyor of porn, of sexual pornography. Now, when you came up with this idea, because, you know, I went and saw the pictures on your site. Now, when you came up with the idea to put these pictures up, you know, what were you in your mind providing? Were you saying, like, you know, wow, these are really gross, people are going to want to see these because this is screwed up, or was it something else?
I've supported the troops since day one, and it gave me the ability to help in a way that I could help. I not everybody can help in the same way. This was just a way that I could help, and I figured, you know, if they can't pay, and they were still wanting access bad, and I hated to turn them down, and I told them, you know, if they could send me pictures that depicted real life there in Iraq and Afghanistan, because I was aware they were issued digital cameras, then they could have free access.
Well, I understand the part about helping them out in getting them the porn that they want. But what I'm trying to get is that, you know, why are you putting these pictures up?
Because it's something that people need to see. You're not going to see this on CNN. You're not going to see this on any mainstream media outlets. That, from what I understand, what you were just talking about before, the Bush administration doesn't even want pictures of, you know, draped coffins. There doesn't want this is an uncensored view coming right from their camera to my site.
It certainly is.
Take them from the camera and literally upload them to the site.
Now, Chris Wilson, why do you think you didn't ask people to send you grisly pictures of the war? You just asked people to show you the war. Why do you think there ended up being so much gore in the pictures they did send?
Because I believe that's what's in their mindset right now. That's what they're seeing every day.
Mm-hmm.
They're sending me what it's like in Iraq and Afghanistan for me to show the rest of our users what are these guys going through every day. What are they seeing?
It's interesting, Chris, because, you know, I went and looked at it at the site, and I was scared to actually go look at it because I didn't want to be disturbed. And, you know, these are pictures of heads being blown off. These are pictures of decapitated heads. These are pictures of detached faces, of burned bodies. I've seen some pictures taken by professional photographers from World War II that depicted some of the same stuff, but the captions were certainly different. Now, one of the interesting and profoundly disturbing things about your site is some of the responses and some of the captions on these photographs, because they are glib. They are, you know, sort of like, this one got what they deserved, and even more lurid. And this also, to me, represents the mindset of some of these soldiers. To you, too?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely the mindset of the soldiers when they're seeing this every day. But I don't think that's much different from the police officer that's been on the beat for 20 years.
I think that you're probably right. I think that it's also important because I know you were getting some criticism from some progressive elements and some liberal thinkers. But I think that it does capture the tone of a soldier that is trained to kill.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. That's what they're thinking, and that's what they're seeing, and that's what we're seeing now.
It's pretty horrifying.
Yeah,
now, Chris Thompson wrote a piece about your website, and in it he described what you do as snuff for porn. Is that a legitimate frame as far as you're concerned?
No, not at all. No, that's a term that I heard from him. I haven't heard that before.
Well, I think that you're gonna, you know, that, well, that's the issue. Because of the context, because you are, you know, running a porn site, because it is a site that, you know, is attractive to people because of prurient interest and they want to go look to.
It's a community. It's a community of like-minded people who like
a certain type of porn.
I think we lost him.
Wow. All right. Well, that's what he was saying is interesting. Is, you know, and maybe we can get him back on the line. But that is, you know, this is the defense of porn on some level, and I understand it. It is a community. He runs an amateur porn site. But the truth is that a lot of liberals or progressives or regular people wouldn't go or wouldn't know to go to this site to see graphic depictions of war. They may not want to. What I'm saying from my own point of view is that when I saw those depictions of war, I was horrified. It saddened me that the soldiers, you know, had the glib sort of humorous tone that they were taking with these pictures. It was offensive, but I do understand that that is the way that soldiers are trained. This is the mindset that most soldiers must have. have in order to do what they have to do. I don't think it's right. I don't think it's good that they put these captions on these pictures, but seeing the pictures certainly showed me, you know, just how horrible that war is. You were saying, Chris, that it is a like-minded community revolving around amateur porn is what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was what's called a niche, and it turned into a niche community where most porn sites, you just go look at pictures and leave.
Right,
Or ours is you go and look and you chat with each other. It's more of a community.
Right, but that was around the sexual porn. Now, the putting up of graphic images of war as being construed by some people would say that you're also doing that for lurid interest. And in your defense, in terms of my reaction to what I saw, was I saw the graphic realities of war in a context that certainly is unusual and certainly will draw people into it for reasons that may not be of the best intentions, but those pictures do exist, and they are not going to exist in the mainstream media. They are not even going to exist in some more progressive medias in order to show the horrors of war, but they do exist on your site, and it happens to be a porn site, and that is what it is. I took from it a more deep horror of what war is really like.
Yeah, and if it comes back to, you know, why does it take... But asked this before, why does it take a porn site to be able to show these pictures? Well, I don't know. I guess because the mainstream media won't. And so
that's why
I'm showing them.
Yeah. Do you get frightened by some of the feedback that you see on your website around these pictures? I mean,
I get a lot of creepy phone calls and a lot of creepy emails.
Like what?
Oh, I've been threatened to be the next person to be beheaded.
By who? Do you think that was from? What angle was that coming?
They claim to be the Iraqi resistance, whatever that is. And
interesting.
I've been contacted by Al Jazeera to come and talk with them, and I don't know.
But no American press, other than us, really?
No, the American press is either not interested or, I don't know, haven't heard much from them. There's a lot of overseas press, but no, the American press seems uninterested.
Now, Chris, were there any photographs that you received that you did not put on the website for whatever sets of reasons? Was there anything that you thought crossed the line?
Not really. If it's coming from them, if it's legitimately coming from one of the soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan, from one of their cameras, from what they're taking, it goes up. There's no... you get people that pretend to be something and try to slap up some advertising in there. I've removed some of that, but there's been no, you know, other than that, I haven't censored anything that's gone up there.
We just got a creepy call from somebody here at our station saying that we were, by talking to you, attempting to link the military to pornographers.
I'm sure they're going to love that link.
Yeah, I mean, and you're in contact with these soldiers every day. I mean, how many soldiers do you think you're in contact with?
Well, on the site, I have roughly 30,000 that are registered.
30,000. That's interesting. Well, look, Chris, it was very interesting talking to you, and you know, I'm sort of glad that we were the first American news outlet to actually cover something in its own twisted way. You provided me with a service that I wouldn't have had, in that I have never seen those type of images from this war, not since a few escaped after the killings of those military contractors. And again, the site is nowthatsfeduup.com. I don't recommend it if you are going for jollies or you're expecting something that isn't graphic. But if you want to, you know, fortify your stance against this war, this will certainly help. I appreciate that, Chris Wilson. Take care.
Hey, take care.
All right, Chris. Bye-bye. Oh man, there was a darkness just came over over the studio. A sort of strange a creepiness, because I'm thinking about those images and I'll never be able to get them out of my head. It's 46 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio. We're going to have Lawton Smalls in a little while. Also, apparently there's an Al-Qaeda newscast that is now available. We'll talk about that in a second.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your vlog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Dun, 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 dun. 51 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Got a call on the line from Minneapolis. Good morning, Jenna. How are you?
Hey, Jenna.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm so happy I have the same birthday as Mark Maron.
Oh. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
So you're a Libra, too, huh?
Well, I guess so.
Yeah, I know.
Happy birthday.
That goes right up there with one of the most stupid questions I ever asked in my life. Happy birthday to you.
Well, can I talk to Lawton?
He's not here yet. He's going to be here, he'll probably be here in about 20 minutes.
she doesn't even want to talk to you.
I know.
He's absolutely I really love Lawton Smalls.
Well, you know what, Jenna, I'm gonna have Lawton say hi to you today. He's not in the studio right now, but I'll certainly. I'll have him wish you a happy birthday.
All right. Well, I want to wish you a happy birthday too.
Well, thank you so much, Jenna.
I wish I could be there with you, but I'll make it there someday.
Okay, good. You'll come to one of our live shows someday.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Well, make sure you introduce yourself.
But I listen to you every day in the swimming pool with my waterproof headset radio.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. I didn't know anyone was listening to us underwater. Do you?
I have a waterproof Sony, and you go with me to morning aquatics every day.
Well,
fantastic.
And then I burst out laughing, and then everyone wants to know. Tell me, what'd they say? Are you listening to Mark and Mark? What'd they say?
Oh, that's great. Oh. We're in the pool.
Spreader of the word.
But we're in the pool with Jenna, laughing.
And there's something more.
What?
You really get me through the hard times, like right after Carrie lost.
Yeah.
And,
we were all pretty upset here.
And so I just want to say thank you, and I think I heard Arthur Schlesinger Jr. say after Carrie lost that our nation has a pendulum that seems to swing from one side to the other, but due to our great Constitution, it always rights itself. And
nice.
I think that's mostly because of freedom of the press, and I see the pendulum swinging back. I see our country coming back. And I think that you get a lot of credit for that.
Well, thank you so much. That was so sweet of you to say, and I'm very happy to be in the pool with you every day.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, take it easy.
Take care, Jenna.
That was very nice.
Yeah, it was.
I think you're right. I've talked to other people about that pendulum effect as well. And I think it is swinging back the other way. I feel that.
I feel
a little. My head is a little higher these days. A congressionally mandated advisory panel to the State Department called the Advisory Committee on Cultural Diplomacy went on a fact-finding mission to the Middle East last year, and they found, surprisingly, folks, we're not well-liked. Imagine that. Majorities in Egypt, Morocco, and Saudi Arabia view George W. Bush as a greater threat to the world order than Osama bin Laden. The president of the Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy said, quote, the level of anti-Americanism is 10 times what it was just a year ago, end quote. The committee has recommended a series of steps, including funding and staffing to rebuild and promote U.S. cultural ideas. So this is the buying and bullying plan, Riley. So they're sending newly appointed Undersecretary of State, an infamous Bush stooge / codependent / succubus, Karen Hughes, to visit Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey to listen to people's complaints, and maybe she'll drop off a few detainees to be extraordinarily renditioned on the way. Some of the obstacles she's going to need to overcome, Riley, are they hate us, and also they hate us some more. And also, they see us as hypocrites for endorsing democracy at gunpoint in some places and doing business with autocratic leaders like the Saudis and the Egyptians and others. They're pissed because they're all suspected terrorists, and visa restrictions put in place after 9/11 make it impossible for them to travel. This is coming from a former chief of staff for Colin Powell. He said, quote, it is clear that the American brand has been badly damaged. I'm not suggesting that we change our policy, but we do need to take an assessment of the attitudes toward us by people around the world, end quote. Well, that's a great plan, buddy. So maybe you could just rebrand, repackage, maybe Classic America or America Light. Maybe that'll work. But I'll tell you one thing, Riley. There's no indication that the brand is... I think really it's the ideology and not the brand that has been damaged in the Middle East, because an internet newscast called The Voice of the Caliphate was broadcast for the first time on Monday. It is apparently a news show and a production of Al-Qaeda.
Yeah. a wholly owned subsidiary of Al-Qaeda, apparently.
Self-produced.
Self-produced with an anchor man in a black ski mask with an ammunition belt across his chest.
Good morning, Jihad! It is time for the news. Okay, stop the gun. Stop! Stop the gun! Stop! Okay, the infidels are losing. Would you please stop? I'm talking! Bit forthcoming. No, but apparently they got the guy. The anchorman wore a black ski mask, an ammunition belt. He had a copy of the Quran in his right hand. He had a rifle on a tripod pointed at the camera.
Just in case he didn't like his own image.
Yeah, what a way to bring people in. You know what I mean? All right. So the report is to appear once a week. It presented news about the Gaza Strip and Iraq. It expressed happiness about recent hurricanes in the U.S.
On the lighter side of
the news. Yeah. And in America, yay!
It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. But the great thing is this gives us an opportunity to satirize this, so this is going to be a keeper. I cannot wait to sit down with the writers and put this together, the Al-Qaeda news report. But this does mark a change in Al-Qaeda's approach from releasing tapes to actually, as you said, being self-producing.
Yeah.
Because now they can, maybe they'll have their own satellite signal. The lead segment apparently was about the withdrawal from the Gaza Strip as being a victory, and they announced it. Well, look, they actually had a commercial break in English for a movie called Total Jihad. Who says the American brand isn't effective over there? It's the ideology they don't like. It's 57 past the hour. We'll be back with Lawton Smalls, so stay with us. Air America Radio. That's right, it's 6 o'clock. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens. It's Morning Sedition with Mark Maron, who is me, and that's Mark Riley.
Happy birthday, Mark Maron.
Oh, man.
It's not 6 o'clock, by the way.
What time did I say it was? 6 o'clock? I thought I said, it's 6 past the hour. I'm really glad that cake is here. That's all I needed was to be What is that icing on Entenmann's cake? Is that even legal? What is that stuff? I know it's a lot of colors, but it just tastes like butter sugar to me.
I actually saw you, Mark, eat a piece of that cake and then leap from the cake area. Look at this.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God, my buddy Sam Lipside, the famous writer who I have not seen in weeks.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sam Lipside, author of Homeland and The Subject Steve and The Venus Drive, a collection of stories, is here. How do you like that? As if I knew you were coming, I'm going to promo you.
That's beautiful, man. That's beautiful. Happy birthday.
Thank you so much, Sam. Thanks for coming down. Where the hell have you been? I haven't talked. Like I said, I've lost a lot of friends to kids. And
one of them, yeah.
And how's that kid
going?
I've
been going out a lot. I just, you know, I don't call you. Right?
That's because I got to go to bed at 8. But I have been thinking about you. How's it going, man?
It's going great. How's your birthday going?
Well, you know, I've eaten a lot of Entenmann's. I've had a lot of ups and downs in just this two-hour period of time that we've been on the air.
Well, I heard you had a cake, yeah.
Yeah, they had the cake, so now I'm all jacked up on sugar, and my mother called.
How did that go? Was that okay?
It was okay. It was touch and go for a minute when she sang, but she was on key, and I was proud of her.
Oh, that's beautiful.
My father the other day, you'll enjoy this, my father says, "How old are you going to be?" Yeah, so that was nice.
Murky years when you were born.
Yeah. I remember when it happened, but I wasn't home. But he's going to hate it.
You know, Sam is in the news this week. You know that.
That's right. Aren't you one of the top 10 funniest people in New York?
People in New York you've never heard of.
I didn't see the funniest part. I thought it just said 10 people you've never heard of. I told my dad. He said, "That's terrible."
People, you know, I do everything I can to champion the Sam Lipside cause because I think you're one of the funniest people in the world. How's that for pressure? Say something funny now.
I got nothing. Well, now that I'm known, I don't have to be funny.
So how is the kid? Is that working out all right? Did you fix his arm and everything?
I don't really like him.
How old is he
now? When he was 6 months, he was super cute, and I was really into it. But now he's a year and 3 months, and we don't have a thing together. You know?
You're over it.
Yeah.
I get it. You're a kid. Yeah, right. Yay, you.
No, he's great. He just started to walk. He's sort of toddling. You know, he has that drunken sailor walk.
Dunk, dunk, dink.
He's wiping out all the time. This I'm afraid child services is going to see, you know, him crash into the couch every
Why the bruises? He's learning. Young Alfred Major Lipside. Do you think he's a genius? Like most parents, you're not one of those parents that's sort of like, he's a genius.
Oh, I know he's a genius. Yeah,
of course. He's a genius. And what indicates that? He picked up the pen.
The truck goes by, he points at it.
Oh, genius! So are you writing anything?
No, I'm over that.
That's over.
No, I shot that. Yeah, I'm done.
You're actually you're guiding impressionable minds through the process of writing. How's that going?
Which impressionable minds?
You know, those youngsters that you teach at the school.
I don't think they listen to me much. Really.
I can't imagine knowing you and knowing me and knowing what we were like as students and just a sort of weird contempt and resistance and arrogance.
Well, at least they show up, you know. I didn't.
You didn't go either? I went to very few classes.
Yeah.
Is it awkward to be in a position where they're like, Mr. Lipsight? Professor Lipsight?
Yeah, I like the professor. I forced them to call me professor.
And you're not a professor, are you?
No. No. I think I am. I have to check. It's in the paperwork somewhere.
Oh, that's hilarious. Have you had any moments where it was just you just felt bad that like you know you identified so much with the suffering they were going through, but you knew that there was nothing you could do to make them feel better?
Yeah, just this is going to be really bad for a while. Your life, your writing, it's all going to suck.
That's what you tell the kids. Yeah, and you know what? And the bottom line is in the end, it might not go anywhere.
Right. Well, that's
so. Let's see the story. That's encouraging. What are you doing? Are you hanging out for the rest of the morning here?
Yeah.
What's
the story?
Well, we're going to talk about Cindy Sheehan here. She was arrested, and we were going to talk about Michael Brown. But, I mean, after this, are we going to go to breakfast or what?
Buy you breakfast. I didn't bring you a birthday present, so I think the least I
could
do.
Just seeing you. I was talking to my wife yesterday, and she's like, how's Sam? And I'm like, I don't know. I haven't talked to him. And I'm such an idiot because I start to what happens in my head is like I figure you haven't called me, I haven't called you, and then I'm like, that's it. It's a standoff. I understand he has kids, he has a job, he has a lot of things to do, but this is about me, and I'm not going to call until he calls.
So, yeah, I mean, it took the show producer to bring us together.
I know. Thank God. Thank you. That was I almost lost my only friend.
Well, I think they called down the list, you know. They got to me. I had nothing going this morning.
It was just you and my mom.
Right.
Yeah, my dad's already been on twice, and he doesn't even know it's my birthday. So, I'm kidding. I keep busting on the guy, and he just can't take it. He doesn't deserve that, does he?
He's a dad. He
deserves everything he's got coming. No, and everyone asks me, it's like, you've got friends. Aren't you going to go out with your friends? I'm like, I don't know. I haven't talked to Sam. You know? Sam's my friend. All right, so we are going to let's talk about, you want to do some news? Is that what we're going to do for a minute?
Sure, why not?
Oh, we got a caller. Oh, this guy, this was someone who was with Cindy Sheehan. John, how are you, John?
Hi.
Hey, John.
Where were you? You were down in Washington on, what, yesterday, and you were busted?
Yeah.
What happened?
371 people were arrested.
And you guys were all together on the bus?
We were on the bus? No. These are people from all over the country.
No,
all
I know.
All over the country came together.
Well, how did they arrest you?
First we assembled in Lafayette. We walked around the White House on both sides. We had a march, which came from like two sides of the street. It converged on Lafayette Park. We went up to the front entrance of the White House, and we tried to go and talk to people at the White House, and they basically wouldn't let us do it.
That's surprising.
We came back and stood in front of the sidewalk there, and then after a while, the police came and separated us out into two groups. They said, you know, if you don't get off, you're all going to be arrested. And so there were several thousand people there. I mean, it must have been. I couldn't see past about 10.
Wow.
It seemed like there were 10 or 20 deep for, you know, blocks. And they were all standing behind these barricades, you know, just saying, thank you, thank you. This is what real patriots look like. And, you know, we were singing, a lot of singing, a lot of songs, and, you know, people kneeling down. They carried Cindy Sheehan off first. They actually had the carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And the arrest, I think, started around 1 o'clock. They put us all in. At first, they were only arresting one or two people at a time. We thought it was going to take, you know, days to get us arrested. And finally, they brought some buses in.
Right. So, John, nobody was hurt, right?
No. No, nobody was hurt. It was fine. One guy actually jumped over the fence.
To the White House?
To the White House.
And he wasn't electrocuted or vaporized?
He got more than a desk appearance ticket.
Wow.
But, you know, we were there till 4 a.m.
Oh, man.
The Parks Department had never seen anything like this. They're actually really great people at the Parks Department. They were great. After a while, they started, you know, they actually brought us out sandwiches. And we had people, we were handcuffed, you know, until like 2 a.m. in the morning.
They were excited people were using the park, John.
Yeah, right. Well, actually, no, the charges were demonstrating without a permit.
Oh, I didn't know you needed a permit for that.
Just the Constitution.
That's
right.
That's interesting. So, did you have a plan of being arrested? Did you know that was going to happen?
Yeah, they gave us a permit to march around, but apparently there's, you know, it depends on what you're doing, whether you're, you know, going to get arrested or not. I mean, there's people there all day, every day doing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know how they're going to handle this. And, you know, it seems like it's a really flimsy thing to try to. Inquiring, what's demonstrating, what isn't demonstrating?
Right, but
free speech become wrong.
Right, I hear you. So, but everybody's out and everybody got a ticket, mostly except for the guy that jumped over the fence.
I got out around 4 a.m. and there was about 90 women left. Oh, Cool Pink was there. They were terrific. They were singing great stuff.
Yeah, I got a little report of some of the songs that you guys were. There was some,
you know, Katrina, Rita. We need another leader.
Well, thanks for giving us the eyewitness report, John. It was great talking to you.
All right.
Thanks, John.
Take care. So for those of you who don't know, about 371 people were arrested. Cindy Sheehan was the first to be arrested. There was a series of actions yesterday around the White House and the Pentagon, and these people sat down in front of the White House, and some people climbed over the fence. Apparently, what happened to that guy? Because you get this
idea. He's still locked up.
Yeah. But don't you just get this idea that, like, it's like one of those bug zappers that, yeah, you know,
like a laser coming out of the clouds.
Exactly. Like the top of the White House just opens up and gun and vaporize him, but that didn't happen. But he's probably still in jail. But the rest of them were released on minor charges, and we are going to come back here in just a second. Well, Lawton Smalls, I believe, is waiting to say happy birthday to Jenna in Wisconsin, I believe she was. And
Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we're going to have Melissa Bank, another writer, is going to be here. Who, do you know her?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, then we're going to have a little literary salon here in a few minutes. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the fuck up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. My buddy Sam Lipsight, the famous author of Homeland, The Subject Steve, and Venus Drive, is just hanging around and came down to wish me a happy birthday.
Happy birthday again.
Well, thank you. We're taking that to breakfast. That's real, right?
That's a real offer.
That's excellent. So let's get into this now. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So here now is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Hey, happy birthday, Mark. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
And happy birthday to Jenna in Minnesota. Happy aquasizing. That'll be a good time for y'all.
She's going to love you, man. So Bush is, let's try and focus here, Lawton.
Okay.
So Bush is going to need at least $200 billion to clean up after Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita. Where's that money going to come from, Smarty?
Well, Mark, that's not going to be a problem.
Uh-huh.
There's plenty of money out there to help those folks. Scads. Buckets of it.
Really? So you want to get rid of the tax cuts for the rich and keep the estate tax? Is that what you're saying?
Now, how did I know you'd go and say something ugly and inappropriate You know, we have to keep those tax cuts so the money can trickle down. That's not even on the table, Mark.
Wait. So where's the federal disaster money coming from? Your pocket, Lawton?
Well, unlike you Democrats who only have sarcasm and on-demand abortion, I have a plan to pay for Katrina.
Yeah, I was afraid of that.
One, we're going to axe a bunch of those do-nothing government programs. Just carve them up like a Thanksgiving turkey. Mm. Right now is an ideal chance for President George W., two-terms mandate Bush, to liposuck the fat right out of our big socialist government.
Oh, yeah, that's
it.
Right, that's a great idea, Lon. Really terrific. What would you cut, Smarty?
PBS, NPR, National Endowment for the Arts, National Endowment for the Humanities. I'm done financing the gay agenda and smelly bohemians and artists who paint with elephant poop.
Oh, come on.
All right? I say do that stuff on your own dime, Basquiat. Free lunch is over, Romko. Leave my table.
All right. Well, that's all well and good, I guess, there, crazy man. What's the second part of your big plan there, Lawton?
You're going to love this. Uh-huh. There's a huge untapped source of revenue out there, and now would be the perfect time to put it into action.
And who's that, sir?
Children. Do you realize how much potential income is just sitting there?
Wait a minute. What, children in the workplace?
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? I'd say we get rid of all the public schools. Scrap them. You know, that failed. Move on from that.
Wait. Well, where are the kids supposed to go to school then?
Well, lots of places. They can choose between homeschooling or private schooling or church schooling. Here's the fun part. Uh-huh. They can go right into the workplace.
Okay.
Kids can bring home a paycheck instead of wasting their time finger painting and napping and all that other liberal nonsense.
Liberal nonsense? That's nuts. That's nuts.
Finger painting.
That's nuts, Lawton.
I got another option. Uh-huh. If that doesn't work out, they can go straight into the military. Just right into there.
What, the military? For kids?
Why not? They've been training on video games all this time. Might as well put them in a real tank and let them fight some terrorists over there. It's what they want.
Whoa. Get, Lawton,
they love it.
Where do you get this stuff, Lawton?
Okay, all the kids will be contributing to the gross national product, earning their keep. Instead of becoming lazy, overthinking, coddled liberal good-for-nothings, their taxes will pay for Katrina, Iraq, and any other wars we might want to have. We just need to make the pie bigger.
You know what?
Everybody wins.
Lawton, you're out of ideas. You failed.
Everybody wins.
And you know you failed, and you're grasping at any crazy idea now, and I think I know where this is all coming from,
it's
my friend.
From a place called common sense.
No, it's not. Your dad made you work, didn't he? Your dad did when you were a kid. He made you work, didn't he, Lawton? Your dad made you work, didn't he, Lawton? Yeah, see, I knew.
When I was five, Daddy made me sing Hank Williams songs on the corner for nickels and dimes. And when I had enough loose change in my little hat, I'd stand in front of the liquor store and beg a grown-up to buy Daddy some Jack Daniels. And when Daddy was finished drinking, he'd kick me out of the house, make me sing some more for his drinking money.
Oh, no.
Hey, good looking.
Oh, no. take it easy, buddy. Take it easy. All right, I always end up in this weird place with you. All right, you know, Lawton. All right. Take, please. It's too weird and sad. Please. You all right, Ben? Are you okay? What? You all right? Okay.
Kids will love being in the Army. You know, they already wear the combat pants. This is going to be an easy transition.
All right. Yeah, all right, goodbye, Lawton.
All right, God loves you, Mark. Happy birthday now.
Okay.
Deal with it.
All right, thank you. Wow. You know, it's gotten to this point with Lawton where, you know, when I get him upset like that I'm so relieved that he's out of the pit of darkness that is at the core of his being that I'm actually happy when he pops out there at the end.
You know, he's starting to scare me. Eliminating public schools and put kids directly in the workforce and in the military. I think there may be some people who actually think that might not be that bad an idea.
You think he's at the cutting edge of the new neocon thinking?
If we hear Condoleezza Rice say something, we know what's up.
Exactly, right? So many people, there's a lot of people that think, I'm not even going to break the fourth wall on that. I think that Lawton may be hired as an advisor. I mean, hell, they just rehired Michael Brown as a FEMA advisor to try and figure out what went wrong with
what he did wrong.
He's just going to sit around going, don't do that. No, don't do that. You might want to be a little faster on that. Yeah, I'm an ass. Sorry. Just sits around and does that at the office. We have Melissa Bank coming up. She's a wonderful writer, and her new book is The Wonder Spot. And we will talk to her not about what they call chick lit, though. Apparently that's the big... No, you don't say that. This is just a good book.
There you go.
You got it. So she'll talk to us in a minute. Stay with us. 27 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
34 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Everybody all right out there? How about a little business? Morning Sedition is heading to New Jersey. We'll be broadcasting live from Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey, next Friday, October 7th. Stay tuned for details on that tonight. If you want to go learn something or be part of something exciting and good, Air America is hosting a special panel discussion entitled Katrina's Wake, Our Government and the Common Good. It's moderated by Air America's own Rachel Maddow. It's tonight at the SUNY Graduate Center at 34th and 5th Avenue from 7 to 9 p.m. Go to Air AmericaRadio.com for details. Here we go. Our next guest is a best-selling novelist. That's very exciting. Best-selling novelist. Her first book was called The Girl's Guide to Hunting and Fishing. Her latest book is The Wonder Spot. Please welcome to Morning Sedition my friend Melissa Bank. How are you?
I'm just waking up now.
Welcome to the energy pit.
Yeah.
Get on board the ride.
It is unbelievable.
I do respect that you brought your own. I love people who will put their own iced coffee into a Poland Springs bottle and bring that with them, as opposed to spend $9 on a cup at Starbucks.
It's really a time-saving device, honestly. I would be happy to spend $9 at Starbucks.
Would you? Oh, so you don't do that? Like
I would
like,
spend $20 if they would wake me up on time for a radio show and bring coffee.
What happened? Who dropped the ball on this?
I dropped the ball as usual.
our half-paid intern, little Goliath there, you see the huge guy right there? He blamed his phone for coming in an hour and a half late today. Did you use a phone or an alarm clock?
An alarm clock. But, you know, the snooze button is so easy.
Ooh, yeah. It's like a methadone drip.
And in a way, you know, the thing about I actually, because of Girl Scout Hunting and Fishing, I got to quit my day job. So I'm really not that good at appointments anymore. I'm really, it's like I'm all loose, and then all of a sudden I've got to tighten up because I've got somewhere to be.
I know. I used to live that life myself, the life of leisure and art.
Well, I do have to say, I worked in advertising for 10 years while I was writing that first book, and I woke up late for work every single day, but every day it was as though it had never happened before. It was like a fresh drama.
Yeah, like
would I be able to get there on time? I was already in trouble with my boss. He'd already talked to me about being late. He talked to me several times, you know.
So you're always the one running in, like just surrounded by the cloud of apologeticness?
Well, I would run in, and I would find out if anybody realized that I was late, and if no one realized that I was late, then I would go out and get coffee.
The invisible Melissa, is she here? She's been here since we opened. So I guess we should talk about the book and talk about this this title that seems to be such a problem. The Wonder Spot is the new novel. Now, A Girl's Guide to Hunting and Fishing was hugely popular with mostly women or no?
Yeah, a lot of women. I mean, mostly women, but men seem to, you know,
gravitate
towards it. Some men liked it too.
Yeah,
wow. No, men liked it too. It was you know, I didn't even realize what I was doing when I titled the book. I didn't realize like that a man would pick it up and say, "Not for me."
I would think that some men would be like, "What are they up to?"
Yeah.
Did you get that? Do you get men? Do you have stalkers by any chance?
I have it. I did have a little FBI file of my own.
No. Uh-oh. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Just, you know, the men writing letters and sending pictures and that kind of thing.
Oh.
It was sweet more than anything else. It's cruel of me to call it an FBI file, but just in case.
And how did you handle it? Because I have a theory about stalkers.
I did nothing, which is my usual tack for almost anything.
I have a theory that if they don't seem too dangerous, what you should do is actually engage them and maybe have lunch or coffee with them, because you will disappoint them and they will go away. Because whatever they think you are is much different than what you really are. And they'll be like, oh, this is you?
Right. No, you know what? That's a cute theory, Mark.
It's cool for a guy, but I'm not sure women can get away with
that. It's what you tell your girlfriend when you want to go out with a stalker, really. I mean, I've seen some of your stalkers, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been to your shows and seen the starry-eyed girls.
Yes, I know. But
Mark,
this was the one I had in mind was actually...
Mark. Hi, Mark.
Ooh, birthday tales. Come on, let's keep going with this.
I know, yeah. Yeah, there was a frightening one. A couple of women do, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. But I was actually thinking about this guy who was stalking me, but not for sexual reasons. He just wanted to be me.
Oh, yeah.
And then when he met me, he was like, oh, wow. All right, thanks for helping me out and reshifting my life's focus. So So can you tell us what the Wonder Spot is about a bit?
Sadly, you can't. I'm not good at that.
Well, it's about a woman coming of age. Yes, yeah. This woman, Sophie, and dealing with her brothers, who she's very close to, and her parents, who she's starting to develop a relationship as an adult with. Yes?
Exactly. Would you mind going on my book tour for me? Yeah. My usual answer is, it's about a girl. But actually, it is. It's about a girl growing up. And she's kind of an ordinary person in that, you know, nothing comes easily for her. Mm-hmm. She doesn't sort of wake up with a calling, and she's just, you know, she's somebody who's looking for a great career but can't find a job.
So like most people that I
that's
know.
Why I, a lot of people have sort of thought of her as like a loser or near to, I think, like, she's just like everybody, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Or everybody, some people aren't willing to admit they are that, but if you know them, they can't hide it.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. It's like, no, I always wanted to be in billboard advertising, even as a child. You know, I mean,
I wanted to be able to walk down the street and point to that billboard and say, I did that. Yes.
I always wanted to be a focus group mediator, but when I was little and people used to ask me.
Now, how important was it for this book to be set in New York?
For me, New York is, you know, it was actually important, because in this book and in my last book and probably in every book I'll write, suburbs represent the original family, the family of origin, as the shrinks say.
Yes.
And New York, I think, represents the chance to be yourself.
Break free
and not, I mean, I think for all of us who were, you know, too gay or too smart or too crazy or too quirky or too ambitious. Mm-hmm. That's what New York is kind of made up. I'm seeing some producers back there shaking their head. It's not made up of that.
No.
Yes, it is. It's made up of all different. And so it, for me, it's like a kind of, it's less of a community, it has less of a community ethic of compliance than it does of, or convention than it does of, a community of kind of individuals. There's, I think, a lot of tolerance here for all
different. I've always thought that. And yeah. I've also heard about New York that if you make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Oh,
have you heard that?
Lord.
You know what? Yeah. Everywhere but New Jersey.
Hey, wait a minute.
You can make it anywhere except New Jersey.
Jersey, yeah.
But if you make it in New Jersey, you can make it anywhere.
There you go.
I think that's true about New York, that what you're saying. I never really thought about it like that, because I'm always amazed when anybody says anything negative about New York in terms of the myths that tourists that we actually let go out there to keep people from ruining our city, that they think it's scary or they think that people are mean or aggravated. I've never met a more tolerant group of people, a more tolerant city, a more helpful city.
People are dying to help. I mean, it's almost embarrassing. Amazing. Like, someone is looking at a subway map and, like, people, can I help you? Can I help you? And you think, like, you know what? I actually live in the city. I just want to find out if the D train, how far downtown the D train goes.
I'm one of those people. I have scared people when I'm like, is there something I can do to show you where you're going? Like, easy. You know, I got
in a bike accident a while ago, and, you know, 50 people kind of huddled around me to help.
Yeah, the people are very concerned, and it is because I think that I never really looked at it as such an amazing group of each one is living an individual life. You don't get that weird kind of groupthink of a suburb that is kind of like sleepwalking. What I'm curious about in this book is Sophie grows to, I guess, appreciate her parents more, which is something I'm trying to do.
You know what she does is I think what happens for Sophie is what happens if you're lucky when you grow up, which is you sort of realize that your parents are just like you. They're really a letdown as deities. They're completely, you know, inconsistent. They didn't do the things you needed them to do, but who does?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody just is sort of doing the best they can. I mean, it's hard for Sophie because after her father dies, the whole dynamic in the family shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother isn't really up to the job of being the parent and becomes more like one of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just, you know, she is just doing the best she can, but it's tough.
Well, I think it's interesting because when you're talking about what are generally depicted as a loser or somebody who is aimless or doesn't know what they're doing, which, you know, I have been in my life, I think some of that comes from an overly permissive childhood when you have parents that are either emotionally detached or overly supportive. You're like, just do whatever you want. And then you end up walking through the world like a kid lost at a mall. You know, is that something that's in
it this is, one? It is. Actually, I think one of the most ironic things is there's one thing that has always struck me, which is these incredibly overprotective parents who kind of keep their kids in and keep their kids like drawn to the hearth of the family and in no way train them to be out in the world. And then they're like, you know, slug larva waiting for everyone to step on them out in the world, you know.
The doormat people.
I mean,
people.
That's just the great thing. Like, you try to protect them, you try to protect them, and then they, you leave, you know, when they actually, you have this opportunity to train them to kind of be okay out in the world, and then they go and they're completely unprepared. But in my family and in Sophie's family, there is a, we were, you know, loved in a way that can be, you know, you always think like dysfunctional families should never be able to love. But, you know, you have this incredibly loving family and it's hard to sort of leave that family and go on. I mean, with Sophie, it's with her brother. She's really close to her older brother and her younger brother. And, and you know, it's hard for her to find another man, really, in the world.
I bet you that would be tough. Do you have brothers?
I have one older brother, but that wasn't really...
That wasn't the case.
Was not, I mean, my brother and I were really close, are really close, but... But this family is really close. So her brothers are really kind of her best friends in some ways.
Now, are they making a movie of the first book? Is that happening?
It appears to be happening.
And who's going to be in that movie?
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Isn't that Buffy the Vampire Slayer in person?
Okay. Yeah.
Are you okay with that?
I don't. You know, I don't have a TV.
Yeah.
Because I don't know why. I don't have a TV.
Because they're draining and hypnotic.
Well, now they are because I have no tolerance. I mean, I just like fall into it. I have no resistance. I drool. I could never turn it off.
Crying at commercials.
You know,
eating ice cream during Oprah.
Exactly. Oh, but no. I didn't, you know, for all those years of working in advertising, I never had, I never turned on the TV. So now I'm completely vulnerable. But so I don't know Buffy. I don't know. I've heard good things about her. I am not involved in that movie.
Yeah, that's what a lot of writers say. They have no control over it, and now you just have to sort of wait and hope it doesn't hurt you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the terrible movie, I don't know whether you feel this way, but the worst case scenario is the scenario that I think of as Endless Love, which is Scott Spencer, who is a really, really good writer.
Yeah.
The first, like, 20 pages of Endless Love are some of the best writing anywhere. He's in love with this girl. They're in high school.
Yeah.
And they've been forbidden to see each other. And basically what he does is he sets her porch on fire so she will come out. How good thinking.
Wow.
How,
it's out of the box.
That works with rodents.
However, her whole family is inside. Tripping.
Oh.
And,
I gotta read
literally?
This.
It's actually, yeah, they're tripping. The mother, the father, the little kids, everybody is tripping and they basically get trapped inside in this fire. So, I mean, he's a really good writer.
That's pretty heavy.
And that then, what do you think of when I say the words Endless
isn't
Love?
Isn't that Brooke Shields?
Exactly.
And, yeah. And a Lionel Richie song.
Yeah.
I think the best thing that can happen to a writer is something like Catch-22, which is a completely undecipherable, surrealistic movie that has moments of genius. And you walk away going like, that was great. I don't know why, but man, that was weird.
I don't know why.
But that book was sort of like that.
Yeah.
Well, I hope they do good with it. And I hope you do great with this book. Our guest has been Melissa Bank. The new book is The Wonder Spot. And enjoy and read. Thanks for coming and seeing us.
Thanks so for having me. Happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
Don't smell like a monkey or look like one.
Well, thank you. What does that mean?
That's an old
happy
rhyme.
Happy birthday.
Oh, okay.
You smell
okay.
like a monkey.
All right. In a minute, some sad news about Agent 86. It's 47 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Now, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
All right, it's 52 past the hour. Let's put this thing down. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
It has been my birthday.
Yes.
It's been good so far. My buddy Sam Lipsy came down, had some nice cake. My wife bought me a a massage, which I think is one of many presents, apparently, I'm excited to get. And now the reason we're playing the music for Get Smart is Don Adams died. He's dead. He was 82 years old. He lived a pretty good long life. He died of a lung infection that he got. He was at Cedars-Sinai out there in L.A. He'd been ill since he broke his hip not too long ago. Don Adams, I'll tell you, Riley, I came to this party late already when I was a kid because Get Smart had already come and gone, I believe, and we saw it in repeats. And he was funny as hell.
Oh, he was a hilarious. I mean, Get Smart was one of those things that you'd come to school the next day and talk about when I was going through elementary school. And, you know, people would come, would you believe? I mean, that was like coming out of everybody's mouths when I was a kid.
Just that voice of his. And, yeah. And he also did the voice for Inspector Gadget, which is the music we're hearing now. Yeah, it's weird when I guess it's not weird, but all these icons from my childhood, and this one is not so much an icon, but somebody that I knew in my childhood from the media, from watching the show.
Yeah,
he's just I'm really starting to realize, like, I'm getting old, and people die, and it's a reality of life. Like last night, I'm laying in bed, I couldn't get to sleep because it was the night before my birthday, and I was sitting there honestly just meditating as I do before I go to bed. Some people pray. I sit there and go, what if I die in my sleep? Which is kind of like praying, but I didn't. But I get this panic, and when these people, they're a whole new generation of comic talent, of artists and creative people are coming up to the point where, you know, Dan Pashman, you know, I'll ask him stuff like, do you know this Stones album? He's like, nah. He doesn't care because he is so committed to new artists on some level, and a few old artists that he has respect for.
Well, Springsteen.
Right, but there's just this whole part where you just start to realize that history just gets plowed under the ground. Like the music of my father's generation, all right? Like Wooly Bully, The Stroll, Let's Go to the Hop.
Sam the Sham and the Pharaoh.
All that stuff. It's, as soon as that generation dies, why do you think that Air America is on so many affiliates? It used to be oldie stations. Because the people that listen to oldies are gone. They're gone, dude.
Well, I tell you what. A lot of the people that made the oldies are gone. And
that's what I'm saying.
That's what I think. You know, when a guy like Don Adams dies, it kind of means the death for a lot of people of the part of their lives when Don Adams dominated. You know what I'm saying?
He was
when
huge.
They were watching him every week. Oops. Yeah. Watching him every week on TV. I mean, this was Get Smart was a fantastically popular show.
Yeah.
At the time it came out. And I don't think most people who watched it, though, knew how long it was on.
Yep.
I have no idea. It may have been 3-4 years, something like that. I have no idea.
Well, guys, when you're feeling old, remember the words of Lewis Black, who wrote an email saying, happy birthday to you, Mark Maron. So basically, you're 42 today, so that's like, what, two 21-year-olds who sit around and talk about your problems? That's from Lewis Black over email.
That is exactly what it's like. Thank you, Lewis, for sending me that email. He's probably somewhere out there in the world on the road. You know, Don Adams also started as a comic.
Yeah.
You know, these guys, if you're lucky enough in a comic as a comic to get, you know, one shot that'll carry you a few years, enough for you to bankroll enough money to retire comfortably and at least do a little comedy here and there. He was so definable as that character that he couldn't really do anything else because people were so, it was him.
And our crack production staff says Get Smart was out for 5 years.
Wow. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. A new report shows that foreign countries no longer see the U.S. as a beacon of hope, but rather a dangerous force. The Advisory Committee on Cultural Diplomacy found that large majorities in Egypt, Morocco, and Saudi Arabia, quote, view George W. Bush as a greater threat to the world order than Osama bin Laden, unquote. Folks, he's done it. He's finally beaten bin Laden. 80 years after the Scopes trial, the debate over teaching evolution in schools makes its way into a Pennsylvania courtroom. President Bush has said that students should be presented with both concepts when teaching about the origins of life. Bush said he believes in creationism and only doubted it once. The time he doubted it was after seeing Planet of the Apes for the first time, until a friend told him the characters were actors, not actually talking monkeys. Complaints about the New York Police Department are on the rise. The four categories of allegations are abuse of authority, misuse of force, discourtesy, and offensive language. Catchy, but too long to fit on the side of a police car. Today's phrase just dropping into conversation. So they finally got Cindy Sheehan for something. Loitering. Wake up, sheeple. Next, they'll be coming after Howard Dean for driving with the fog lights on. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Good day there, Riley.
It was a great day. Happy birthday, Mark Maron. Tomorrow, I'm going to be real interested in this. We got Ultra Girl coming in here to tell us what to put on the iPod.
Oh, you
Lord
need
knows
that.
I need it. Plus, the War on Trains, Air America Radio.